Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, that is Post covering finance and property news. Another Monday, and guess what? Edwin is with me once again. Hi, Edwin. How are you going?
I'm doing well, Martin, but that ball is kicking, and that ball is kicking hard and fast. There's all sorts of messages out there. Yeah, some are calling. Tom's back to calling the lull. I heard some of his rants over the weekend, but then again, call logic and a lot of people saying we're back, baby. You know, we're back to where Tom was 2 weeks ago. Where the market's double digits in the trillions, $10 trillion and above.
Yeah, it's really interesting what's going on. And what I find fascinating about the bull flying around the place, great video. I tell you what, I wouldn't want to be close to that. But it is interesting also looking at what CoreLogic is saying, because they're basically saying that there is a significant movement again in prices up, but they also talked about the volume, so that the number of properties available in Australia are also rising, and you put those two things together and you get a $10 trillion number.
Well, see, this is the thing. Let's not forget the fact that the CoreLogic numbers are a lag, right? It is a lagging report, so on the other hand, I'm still yet to see the numbers rise as much as what they're saying. Well, albeit in Sydney, we're still not seeing the numbers. They are going up, but not going up in to the extent that the mainstream or CoreLogic or even Tom would like to think that they are. Obviously, they've got to push the barrow. And like we said before, they've got vested interests. In terms of the transactions, look, we're seeing a lot more transactions happening as well in the, and people are paying more than in a lot of cases, more than what they, the properties that are being resold, that got bought a year ago, 2 years ago, 18 months ago, they're fetching a higher price. There are pockets of Sydney where homes have skyrocketed, and a month ago, 2 months ago, they were already beyond the highs of 2021, 2022, and that's what we called because of the WeChat chatter influence and the demand that's there. So, we're going to get a mixed bag of reports over the next few weeks. Some areas we are seeing a lot more numbers come on market. And there's a lot less movement there because of the Mexican standoff. Vendors are yet to be convinced to accept a lot lesser value for the property than what their neighbors may have sold 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, even 5 weeks ago. Expectations are still very high.
I agree. And in fact, tomorrow I'll be running my live stream at normal 8 p.m. Sydney time, and I'll be walking through the latest mortgage stress and rental stress and financial stress analysis, and going down to individual postcodes. So if people want to find out the latest from the surveys, then they should join that stream, or you can ask a question live and you can put in a particular postcode and we can look at it together. So make a note of that.
Look, for Sydney, Martin, I dare say we would need to see at least another 4,000 homes on the market for anything to really change. But so what we're getting, again, going back to that CoreLogic report, is we're seeing the rise of that that hunger that we saw throughout winter for buyers, and things are going to change a little bit. And I think in a lot of areas we may see a plateau of property prices for a little while. We obviously, the report is an Australian report, is a in global report, whereas our team, we look at Sydney in general and parts of Sydney, and you also look at things a little bit more granular with your reports that you do for your for the followers as well. So take it on face value and research and research.
Absolutely. Well, of course, you know, we keep saying, but it's worth re-emphasizing, it's not a uniform picture, right? So there are areas where there are a lot of movements up. There are also areas where there are a lot of movements down. So net net, you know, it depends where you go. Ahead, I'm still expecting more listings to come on. I'm seeing quite a lot of evidence now of people listing not very flash properties, but properties they really want to get shot of. So I think that's a factor. But the other one, what about bidders bidding against themselves? It's a thing.
Look, it is, and this is something where the people need to be careful. This is what I keep on putting out before the Saturday auctions where people basically participate on, or even the open house inspections, because of what's out there. There's still a lot of FOMO in certain parts. There's still a lot of misinformation. Guides are still very low in comparison to what they get sold for. Underquoting is I think it's a lot more prevalent than what it was in 2022, 2021, even in previous years. But the authorities won't do anything about it. Well, this is this one that we're referring to here is on Wickham Road at Epping, and it does it has an interesting story, right? And this is what as I put out there, and as I put to you, what do you call a WeChat chatterer that outbids themselves? Not only once but twice, Martin. Some would say they got marbles for brains. Others will say stupid. I would say they're loaded. They've got more money than sense. But it's an interesting story, and this is where overall the home was guided at 2.2 to 2.3 throughout the campaign. It was the vendors were never going to accept anything below the 2.5. At one stage, I was made aware by the neighbors that the owners wanted 2,690,000, closer to the 2.7, and comparable sales in the street. We're selling anywhere between 2.5 to 3 million in the neighborhood. So the 2.2, 2.3 was really a hoax, was shenanigans that agents play. But that was the beginning of the comedy. That was the preamble to the comedy that took to the comedy skit that took place over the weekend on a Saturday evening. The auctioneer was a very colourful individual, I must say. He talked about football, cricket, soccer, WWE wrestling, and all sorts of different brought in different ways and means to try and coerce and coach the people to bid. It stalled for about 15 minutes or so at the beginning of the auction. And there were no bids whatsoever, not even around the 2.2 guide, the lower guide. So the lo and behold, the vendor came in with a the auctioneer came in with a vendor's bid. It was disclosed that the vendor's bid was used first cab off the rank. It was uncanny. I've never really seen anything like that before in all the time that I've attended auctions. And that was interesting in itself. But the interesting thing was that because of the ignorance of the people that were participating at the auction, and I say ignorance in the literal term of the meaning, the non-understanding of how auctions work and how they function. Many believed that when the vendor's bid came in, many were under the impression that the property was on the market. At that time, with a vendor's bid of 2,250,000, so a few of them got excited. Three participated in after the vendor's bid, and he took the bidding to 2,375,000. In between the 2,375,000 and the start of the auction, I think it probably ran for about 45 minutes. It was getting dark and getting cold because the auction was held at 5:30 in the afternoon, in the evening. So bidder 10 held a bid at 2,375,000. And then after about 10 or 15 minutes or so, they it was all theater. It was all drama, going backwards and forwards, asking, going inside with to get the advice. Are we on the market? Which was bullshit. It was never on the market below 2.5. And as I said, I was under the impression it wasn't going to be on the market below 2.6 anyway. So, but they were going, all the theater, all the smoke and mirrors were happening, and they actually coerced the bidder 10 to bid against themselves, and they went from 2,375,000 to 2,450,000, which was a $75,000 jump. Now, then they were calling on the market again, 1, 2, 3. It didn't go. The hammer didn't drop. Blah blah blah. Theater again. 10 minutes or so, going back inside to the huddle, discussions. They came back out again and targeted the same bidder. They picked the bunny in the crowd, and that was the one. Everybody else stopped bidding. Everybody stopped bidding after, before the 2,375,000, mind you. It was dragging on. So what happened then was they actually got another $50,000 out of this bidder mutton, and they went from 2,450,000 to 500, and then it was finally called on the market. And again, after a bit of smoke and mirrors and a bit of theatrics, and the hammer went down, and he got sold for 2,500,000. So that was a comedy show. It was it, it, if I had a if I had a camera rolling. And we're able to show it instead of the rant, I'm sure we would get 20,000 views within the first two days. It was funny. It was an experience, even for me.
Well, it is interesting. I have been at a few auctions where, the pressure has mounted, and the bidder who holds it at the moment gets coerced to go higher. And sometimes it's because, of course, the vendor isn't prepared to sell unless it goes higher. So it isn't completely out of whack. But when you're already well above the guide, you got to say, it just goes to show that auctions are much more than mechanical. It's all about psychological, and it's all about where people are prepared to be pushed to. And some auctioneers are actually extremely expert at applying moral pressure and everything else to shift the dial.
Look, this auctioneer was a colourful character. If any of my clients in the area want to use this fellow, I'd certainly I'll chase him down. I'll he was yeah he made me laugh. I'm sure he made a few people cry, but he was he was look it was all theatre. But people have got to understand, and they've got to learn to read the room. As I said, Martin, everybody was out. The majority of the people, everyone was out after the 2,375,000 bid. I mean, the next the underbidder at that point, I think, was at 2,350,000, and then this one came in at 2,325,000. And that was it. But look, it happens that there's all different reasons why they say that they use this strategy. So that basically they're doing two things. They're doing one, working the buyer to come up, and also the conditioning, and they're really pressing the vendor to sell on the day, because they're saying, see, this is the market. The auction, is the best way of finding out where the market is, and the price on the day dictates the market, and so forth. Very little is taken into consideration about the fact that the guide was so bloody low in the first place. It devalued the rest of the home. I mean, I was talking to some of the locals there, some of the local owner property owners that were looking at putting their houses. They may have been looking at putting their houses on the market, hence they were having a sneaky of the of this auction. But the general conversation with two of the neighbors was that they'll certainly never use this agent to put their properties on the market if they ever wanted to sell, because of lowballing, and it really doesn't do any justice to the market in the local area. So they think they're doing themselves a favor, but they're doing themselves a disfavor, and they're also doing their clients a disfavor because. But then again, Martin, that's the game. Your first priority as a selling agent is to get the listing that no matter what. I mean, tell whatever little lies you want to tell in terms of telling the vendor that they're going to get them the 2.7 that they were expecting, and pricing it low at 2.2 is going to get the crowd in. It's only got the crowd in, but at the end of the day, there was only one genuine buyer. Everybody else peeled off, below the 2.4. And then the second aim that the selling agents have, obviously, is then to use the marketing strategy or the marketing campaign, and on the day of the auction, to really crunch and put pressure on the vendor, to, as they say, to meet the market. But that's the theater. That's the theater, right? And we know it. Our followers know it, and I'm sure our followers are. I'm going to be foolish enough to fall into those tactics used by the selling agents.
Yeah, it's a performance, isn't it? It's a show, as you say, it's theatre. And you need to be very careful if you're going to participate in that. You need to understand the rules of the game, but also understand that the rules are a bit warped.
And they're stacked against you. And when the regulators don't come in, this would have been a classic, time for the regulator to come in and say, "Right, show me the marketing campaign. Show me the they look. They don't even need to show anything because it was all public. I don't oh, just off the top of my head, I don't know whether the guide was published on Real Estate or Domain. But you only had to go to the open house, and you and anybody and everybody there on the day." That wanted to participate did not want to really go beyond that 2.3 anyway, because that was 2.3, 2.35 was the 2.2 to 2.3 was the guide, and you expect a little bit above that. So there was a lot of reluctance, but it is what it is. So that was the well, our friendly chatterers. Unfortunately, they're very they're not used to buying property in this way, and they get they get hoodwinked into offering more than what I believe should have been offered. The other thing, Martin, that stood out to me throughout the marketing campaign was that they were advertising this property as a 5-bedroom dwelling with the shed at the back that had been converted into a sleep out or a teenage retreat. It was just a shed that had been done up. That's what it was. It was just probably an old asbestos shed because the original house was built in the early 70s, probably around 74, 75, because originally it was a yellow, the blonde brick at the house, and the internal design of the house lends itself to that era. So and the shed would have would have been at the so it, there was a lot of there was a lot of misleading comments made by the agent and the agency that carried this property for sale. And look, I dare say that if the purchasers, which I doubt, but if they wanted to have a beef and wanted to have a go at getting the deposit back or getting the money back, they've certainly got a lot going for them. But I doubt it. These people wanted to buy to move into the area because it's a sought after area for the WeChat chatterers.
Yeah, and talking of WeChat chatterers, your other post was also quite interesting, right? This is now where people are actually talking about dumping properties that are 2 to 5 years old, particularly apartments.
Yeah, these are the WeChat groups that Dusty and Evan monitor across Sydney. And three out of the four investment groups that Dusty and Evan monitor, they're really the chatter is really heavy, really high with regards to basically dumping, getting rid of your non-performing investment properties such as your apartments. And the general trend across all those groups was your apartments that are between 2 and 5 years old, that basically they're going to get out. They're getting out as long as they don't lose any money. By way of they'll sell for what they bought for is the main chatter. That was one of the interesting things that they were bringing out there. So this and these are apartments in areas where they're caught up. Not only in areas, but in apartment blocks or complexes that the strata and the owners' corporation are very strict with regards to budget accommodation. In other words, the room letting or hot bedding. So these are in those apartment blocks and in those areas where they're mainly rented out to the traditional arena, where the return, the rental return, is not covering the mortgage. So they're basically saying, let's sell. So and it's going to be a watch this space, Martin, because what it means is, in my opinion, presently, that owner occupiers are going to be moving in and buying these, because we're talking about they're prepared to accept prices for these apartments that they bought for 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, as long as they get out. The interesting part of it is the why are they doing it, and across these the WeChat investment group. Groups, there's the theme of letting go of your ill-performing or non-performing property assets and really seeking the houses that can be better or easily converted into budget accommodation. So it's going to be an interesting dynamics moving forward over the next 3 to 6 weeks to see. We could potentially see the apartments for sale numbers go up a lot. They've been dropping, but more to the point, and I think what's going to affect the general population a lot more, which is the rental population, and that is there's going to be less available for sale because we're going to get first-time buyers or people that just want to place a secure a principal place of residence. They're jumping into apartments because they can no longer afford anything other than apartments. The budget's tight, and when they see these sort of again, bargains that come on the market, they'll jump on them, is my call. So we're going to have less on the rental market in terms of apartments. We're going to see more apartments on the market to be sold, but I think they'll be quickly absorbed by your first-time owners or people that just want security and longevity and a roof over their heads for the young families.
Yeah, it is very interesting, Edwin, and I've had a couple of one-to-one conversations over the last few days with people who have non-performing apartments, and actually they bought them in the last few years. So quite often 2 to 5 years is that window, and it's quite interesting when people sit down and do the math in terms of what they're actually getting and what they paid and what the value currently is. And there's a sort of a sudden realization that actually the best thing to do is to get shot of it. You can sell it and you can get a little bit of capital gain by selling it. Whereas if you hold on to it, the risks are that the value is going to deteriorate down the track, and the rental returns just aren't sufficient. Even with putting the rents up, as where people would want to put them up, they still can't get a return that actually warrants holding the property. So it is fascinating that we're starting now to get a realization that there are non-performing assets around property, and a lot of them are in these high-rise apartments, and a lot of them are relatively recent transactions. I think this is going to be a very significant development, and again, one of the reasons why I think we're going to see listings continue to rise. I guess what I would say, though, I don't know what you think, that if you are an owner-occupier and you're looking at this property, you need to be a little bit cautious. There are a couple of things. Well, first, of course, is that some of those investment properties are not that well maintained, and the other is that these properties are not very unique. So you are buying one of a number of very similar properties that are around in the place. So from a long-term value hold perspective, I question whether it makes a lot of sense. But in terms of short-term desperation to get out of the rental market and get something to buy, that's the motivation that I'm seeing from some of these people. And unfortunately, some of those who jump may jump into the wrong solution.
Yeah, look, and the other thing is you've got to be also careful, very, very careful as to the strata, the strata complex, the complex itself, and the strata levies, and how and make sure that you do research on and see what the strata reports have been saying. I know some apartments are upwards of $12,000 per annum in terms of individual lots requiring an extra $12,000 per annum. That's just for strata levies and special levies being raised because of the shoddy construction. So that's something else that people have got to be careful. But look, desperation, Martin, desperation does all sorts of things. And unfortunately, a lot of people forget to do all sorts of weird and wonderful things when they get desperate. I mean, we all do it from time to time across different areas of our life. When we get desperate, logic seems to go out the door, as they say. But one of the interesting things is when I put that tweet up, Don Flanagan, one of our followers, followed that tweet and said, "Our Airbnb law changes are coming, mate." Because of the Airbnb changes to regulations, obviously down in Victoria, as well as over in the US and in Canada. I for with his question that it's a real question. I mean, until something really starts taking shape here in Sydney. And when it does, I mean, I don't unless we really see a lot of numbers on market, I don't believe that it's going to have much of a change, even if those regulations were adopted into the Sydney arena because of the because we are still the flavor of of the year internationally. I mean, there's from the reports of May or so of this year. I mean, the students that have come into Sydney have doubled, and that's from all over the world. I mean, we are the flavor of the month, not only for Asian students, but also for all South American, European, and even parts of America. So it's interesting how things are moving. But again, I am with you. I do want to see a lot more properties market so that things can ease a little bit for the people that are wanting to get into the market. But for me, there's got to be a lot of more properties coming on the market. And yeah, it's buyer beware because the ones that are coming on are not necessarily the pick of the bunch, right? And this is where you've got to be careful, both across apartments and homes, because the homes that are mainly coming on are, in the most part, homes that are being held as investment properties that have had very little maintenance over the last decade and a half, and have got a lot of underlying issues that the before you bid reports are not picking up. And as I keep on saying, how can a building inspector do a proper report on a dwelling when they only spend 15 to 20 minutes there? They don't even get underneath the subfloor area, if there is a subfloor area, and nor do they get into the roof space to see what's going on there. It's just the in and out, and but it's a minimum requirement that people and conveyancers seem to accept, and life goes on. But unfortunately, that it comes to a screeching halt. When then they get bills of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars to rectify the issues. And again, I say that also in the apartment arena because I've seen bills of $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 per unit per lot to do rectification work worth millions of dollars across all the common areas in these high-rise developments.
Yeah, and it's just worth underscoring, Edwin, that if you look at some of the bankruptcy figures and look at the cause of bankruptcy, the significant rise in strata fees has now really come out as one of the front leading reasons why people are declared bankrupt. And I find that astonishing. Not surprising, but astonishing insofar that the quantum of movement in terms of strata fees is astronomical. And this is driven by two things, obviously by inflation and the cost of everything's going up, but also the poor quality of construction of many apartments are now coming home to roost. So suddenly there are huge remediation bills coming through, and individual property owners, whether they live there or hold it as an investor, are unable to meet the requirements. And so the only excuse that they've got is to say, well, you know, I can't pay. And guess what? They end up going through the bankruptcy process to get rid of the problem. I think this is probably something which is not being talked about sufficiently, and to me is a very worrying trend.
Yeah, and if you recall, in 2019, we were talking about a similar trend.
Yep.
And we were talking about, because of the economic situation in China and how a lot of the Chinese investors, the foreign investors that were holding onto the apartments in the high-rise developments that were had a lot of issues, and the strata levies started skyrocketing. Well, the rent, the normal rental, the traditional means of renting an apartment was not bringing in sufficient to pay the mortgages in part, and also to pay the overheads, the strata levies, the special levies, and everything else in between. So. And this is where that was happening. We were talking about it in 2019. So it's a beast that's surfacing once again. And this is another reason why the WeChat chatterers are saying across the property investment platforms, they're saying get rid of your non-performing in investments and start focusing on houses, on freestanding houses. They're encouraged to get up to worst case scenario a townhouse, but anything beyond that, that's just not going to be non-performing. And if it is a townhouse, obviously it would be something that, again, it would be in an area or in a demographic or a pocket of Sydney where you can still get away with your budget accommodation, because that is the key. That is the key factor that is driving the property prices in a lot of the areas by the local WeChat chatterers. And this is nothing to do with overseas chatterers that are coming in and pulling the money in from everywhere else other than China. So it's, yeah, the numbers have certainly got to rise in terms of those apartments that are going to be up for grabs. And it is going to be interesting, as you say, and maybe the mainstream media will pick it up after a couple of weeks after this rant, Martin, because we know that the AFR watches, some of the reporters from the AFR watch our rants and some of the people from Domain. So you never know. It might come up in a couple of weeks' time.
Absolutely. Well, watch this space, because I think this is going to be a very significant developing area. Another interesting development area. Last week, we spoke about the fact that they're not even hiding it, Edwin. They're not even hiding it. Well, here's a story of somebody who's actually found a way of sneaking in a rather interesting little trick.
Yeah, this post was put out there by a character, Huey YYYY2, shared this post on Twitter, and I thought it was interesting because last week we were talking about how the selling agents are not hiring. It's in your face, the underquoting and the shenanigans that go on. But this goes beyond. This is now really sneaking in, where apparently in the contract of sale, in the special conditions of a contract for sale, I'd imagine in very, very small print, as he says in please read the contract carefully, it was literally a sneaky two line in a booklet of pages in regards to the sale, where the vendor, upon achieving the sale, the special condition was that the property was to be leased back to the vendor for a year at almost 50% less than the current value of rentals in the area. Well, look, you take it on the chin, right? But this goes back to what I've been saying all along. You've got to have a really good team around you in order to transact, particularly when you've got to make quick decisions, and you've got to be careful. And the contracts have got to be read very, very carefully, because it's not only in this case with this instance here where you've got a lease back option that will be activated upon exchange of contract, but you've also got other contracts of sales where you've in the previous one that I shared in Wickham Road in that auction sale where that shed the shed at the back was converted into the fifth bedroom, and it was advertised as a fifth bedroom. Now, one of the it was interesting that one of the buyers there on the day, on the evening, was very well aware of what the contract had said, and they now this is what they told me. They alleged that the extension to the rear of the house was not council approved, and definitely the dwelling that the shed converted into a teenage retreat or whatever you want to call it was definitely not council approved, let alone for the agent to advertise it as a 5-bedroom because that incorporated that shedding that had been converted into a teenage retreat was the fifth bedroom. So these are the things that people have got to be really careful of, and the conveyancers have got to be, or conveyancing solicitors, have got to be across these contracts, because there's a lot of stuff going on. There are three properties in Blacktown that are that I'm following up on a monthly basis that are being reported in to Blacktown Council that got sold with without the flippers obtaining occupation certificate on the dwellings. So they're still active. They're still under investigation. And I can tell you one out of the three will never be approved. I can be assured I'm 110% that they will get a demolition order based on people that I've spoken to, based on knowledge of that particular development. So and it was sad because people paid premium for these properties, and people are paying premium for these properties, and when you get these special funny conditions lobbed in there, and conveyancers are too lazy to go through them, or they skim through them and they skim past them, well, they miss very very important things that could again cost people tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Absolutely. Read the small print, and make sure that you're a conveyancer or a solicitor. Goes all the way through the contract, right the way back to it, and make sure that everything is clear. Again, I hear so many grief stories where there's stuff that is not actually disclosed, and who blames who? It can be a real mess. So it's worth making sure you've got, as you say, Edwin, the right people around you when you make a transaction. Now let's move on and talk about the Greens. The Greens had a victory. Well, sort of. Another $1 billion is going to be ponied up by the Albanese government to be able to support social housing this year. But of course, it's all a bit of a sort of a shenanigans in terms of trying to get this Housing Future Fund sort of sorted out. And guess what? It looks as though that will now be passed. But it's worth posing the question: this particular agreement, what will it really do? Remember that what this is basically throwing money into an investment account and hoping that the money coming out of the investment account will be sufficient to be able to actually fund the construction of some properties. I think they spoke about, what, 30,000 social houses, et cetera, et cetera. But it's all a bit of an if and an and. And, in the scheme of things, it's a relatively small beer. But there's also a bunch of really critical questions, right, which comes immediately off the back of it.
Yeah, look, again, as you brought one of them up, what is it? It's a fund, right? So it's going to be the properties that are going to be built are going to be built from the interest on the fund, as far as my understanding. I mean, it's yet to be really put out there. I guess it's going to be one of those things like The Voice, where we get the front page, but we don't get the rest of the booklet to really understand what's going to happen. But for me, the question goes back to the fundamental question goes back to what are they going to build? Is it going to be apartments? Is it going to be freestanding homes? Is it going to be, what are they going to build? Where are they going to be building them? And when are they going to start building? So, I don't know. They're the questions that spring to mind from the get-go, Martin. Because it's very important to what are they going to be if they're going to be building high-rise development, which is pretty much where it's going to go, right? it's going to take if they, as again I keep on saying, if they put shovel to the ground tomorrow, it's going to take 2 to 3 years before occupation certificate is granted. And where are these buildings going to be put? How far away from infrastructure are they going to be? What part of Sydney won't allow these? What part of the Sydney's NIMBYs won't allow these developments to go on? And how many are going to get started? Because this is a future fund, for where exactly? Where is it going to be? I mean, who's going to be who? What city is going to be first cab off the rank to take advantage of the dwellings that are going to be built? But all I can see is pain. Again, if things start tomorrow, we're still going to be feeling it. Renters are still going to be feeling the pain, and those that are being disenfranchised, those that are being that are seeking or looking for housing assistance, government housing assistance, it's going to be painful, but for 3 to 5 years to come still. But yet, where the immigration tap's still open, and it seems to be that continue to open that even more and more from what I see on the ground. And it's going to be more it's going to get more and more painful, because we haven't really felt the extent of that the policy yet. I think we're only probably feeling 20% of what we're going to have to endure, because the numbers aren't certainly haven't piled in just yet.
Now, well, the migration tap is turned firmly on and will continue. But you've got to understand, Edwin, this is more about what I call announceables than anything else, right? They want to throw out the big number. So they're talking about 1.2 million homes over 5 years. Sounds like a big number, but it's not that big a number. And if you look at it in the context of migration, it's not sufficient even to stand still. And then they talk about 30,000 homes for social housing, and they sort of associate it with single women and all those. There's a bunch of different groups that they're trying to I think hit. But to me, the Greens are smart here, right? Because they've realised that one third of the Australian population are renters, and so what the Greens are doing is effectively dog whistling specifically to the rental sector. And saying the only party that's taking any focus on renters is Greens, and that's worth filing away for the next election, right? I think you're going to see this come through. The other interesting observation with this whole scheme is that a lot of the work and the heavy lifting won't be done by the federal government at all. It'll be done at the state level. And so therefore the bribes that come down from federal through these various funding agreements will then go into the state environment. And of course, you can't separate premiers from funds. They get very excited about it, but then what are they going to do about it? What's going to change the behavior down at the state level? Because a lot of the blocks are actually at the state and even below the state level. So to my mind, this is all about announceables. This is not really about true strategy. And the quantum of the intervention that we're talking about here is a spot in the bottom of the bucket. It's going to be insufficient to really move the dial, bearing in mind everything else we know. And I think the other point that's just worth highlighting here, in all of this, you've got a very highly inflationary environment. So the costs of construction are going to rise significantly. So in other words, what they think they're going to be to get for their buck will probably be devalued by quite a lot more by the time they get around to doing it, because there's a long lead time. So to my mind, it's all about announceables, Edwin. That's all it is.
Yeah, as I was saying, it's really buckle down because the ride's only just started. And what are we going to get out of it? Look, there is something positive about all this, right? And that is the politicians are going to give themselves a pay rise. They're going to give themselves a pat on the back. So they'll get themselves another pay rise. They'll introduce another layer administrative. Supervisors, management, to pay out, because somebody's got to manage the little brothers and the little sisters, right? So they'll get contractors in, which will be the maids. There'll be contracts going out left, right, and center. I think Jose has got a better chance of building another two levels and renting the those out than the government has of doing anything substantive. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there, man.
Oh, I think you and
It's
I
just.
both agree. It's all about, being seen to be doing something rather than actually doing something, right? When the levers that they should be pulling, which is to really question the migration, particularly the quality and the quantity of migration, has got to be, it should be the critical agenda item. But remember, of course, that the GDP per capita went backwards again in the announcement last week, right? But the total GDP grew slightly. The reason it grew was simply because we got more people. So they're actually conflicted completely, right? On one hand, they need to push the pedal to the metal to get more people to come in because they're trying to prop up the GDP number. But in the process, they're putting huge pressure on the housing sector. And then they're throwing this very little amount of support against the wall and hoping it'll stick. But then claiming, the 1.2 million and the 30,000 and all of those things. We've got to look past that. This is smoke and mirrors. It's all about announceables and the real true impact of these poor decisions that have been taken over the last few years will show, but not immediately. This is going to grind forward over the next 2 or 3 years. And, talking about what's happening, it's worth just reflecting on the numbers, right? So the listings, well, they're up slightly, but actually, if you look at the listings, this is Sydney. So on the 4th of the 9th in Sydney, 16,623. And if you look at the following week, the 11th of the 9th, 16,813. So a very small uptick, but nothing really significant here, and still well below long-term trends.
Yeah, it's still well below the long-term trend and the in 2020 2022 numbers. So again, I think Tom was talking about auction clearance rates were going gangbusters in South Australia. When you look at the auctions on market in South Australia across the last 5 weeks, I think there's only been between 70 and 90 properties get
Very
put up
small.
for auction. Very little get put on the market. So of course it's going to be a huge demand. I mean, like again, you can you talk averages, you talk you talk shit as far as I'm concerned, because when you start talk, show me the numbers, show me the numbers, and we'll see what's going to happen in an era. But again, Martin, I don't want to be sound like a broken record, and don't want to give the wrong impression, but. People are just going to have to be very, very careful. What they buy. We're going to see, obviously, or in a way, what do they expect to see moving forward? I think a lot of people are feeling the, a lot of families are feeling the crunch, and having to wait, and now seeing this this rebounding in pricing across Sydney. Again, I'm talking purely Sydney, and my call still is on the fact that there's going to be a people moving back into the regions. When I say regions, up to towards Gosford, down past Sarul, past a little bit past Wollongong, and even over the mountains, to Lithgow and such, to have something, to have a roof over their heads, and but yeah, they'll bear the pain of commuting in those long travel times. Because what other choice do you have in a city where we are, again, I say we're the flavor of the month for of the year internationally, for international students, for migration, for people that want to live, and this is where it's all happening. People migrated to Queensland over the lockdowns. They, there's all these shifts and changes, again because of Sydney being our backyard. I really need to see these numbers start cranking up above the 20,000, and at least above the 10,000, 10, 11,000 homes on market for things to quit, because the expectations from vendors is still very high. And for those expectations to come back down, expectations that were put in there by the agents and by the general trend, in order for the agents to get the listings, they buy the listing. So they'll tell the vendor whatever they need to hear in order to get that listing and put it on market, with the hope and prayer that they're going to then crunch the vendors down to accept a much lower price than what they told them they were going to get, because they don't want to do the work, because they want to have the property sold within a few weeks and not the not spend the time that's required. It's really interesting, Martin, on that thought, and that is, agents take on a listing on a 3 month tenure, to manage the listing, to manage the sale of the property, on a agency agreement. But yeah, they want to they force the they force the vendors to sell within 4 to 6 weeks. I wonder why. I wonder why. The mind boggles, right?
Funny that, yeah. Interestingly, I was looking at the Illawarra prices, and they're still sliding. So particularly houses. There's been very little evidence of price rises out of the major Sydney region in New South Wales, and that's because there's supply, demand, and everything else. But it also makes moving down into the regions more attractive relative to Sydney, and so I would expect at some point to see that reverse a little bit, but it's not happening so far. So watch this space. Now let's just move quickly to look at Melbourne, because the story is somewhat similar. So on the 4th of September, the 23,910 were the was the score, and 23,954 the following week. So it's a bit of a similar story, really, insofar that listings are a little bit up, but again, not hugely spectacular. And interesting, Edwin, I noticed again that quite a lot of the listings in Melbourne are actually of relatively low quality ex-investment properties. So it seems to me that the investment sector is feeding the market quite strongly, but again, probably not enough to really shift the dial.
Oh, and it's the amount of homes on market. It's 2.5 times the amount of apartments on market, which is rather interesting. I mean, it's well and truly, or maybe not 2.5 times. It's at least double the amount of than the apartments, which is interesting. And as you say, like, again, I don't really do the research on that, because we don't work in that market, but I would think it would be, investment properties bought by Sydney siders, and anybody else that in towns from in out the outskirts of the CBD, where and again, you don't get your general trends like you do here in Sydney. In a lot of the parts of Sydney where the where housing in more and more areas of Sydney, living the North Shore and the Upper North Shore and the North Shore, or the even in the Northern Beaches, if they think that budget accommodation isn't happening around them, you could I've got a bridge to sell you, because that you a lot of these big homes, big ticket homes, are also being converted into budget accommodation. But when you've got areas in Melbourne, in the outskirts, I dare say most of those most of those houses on market would be in the subdivisions, at Whoop Whoop, where you can only rent them out by the traditional means, and you're not going to get your return on investment in order to pay the mortgages down. So yeah, they're going to be on the market because of the pain that the owners are going to be feeling because due to the rate rises.
Absolutely, that's right. And again, I've had a chance to speak to a couple of one-on-ones recently in the Melbourne situation, and interesting was that both of them had actually got high-rise investment properties quite close into the CBD in Melbourne, but the maths were just all over the place, and the key reasons were strata fees going through the roof, and the inability to put the rentals up because they just couldn't find somebody who was prepared to rent it. So again, another reason to put them on the market. So not only is it some older properties, but even some more recent properties in Melbourne are now listing. Let's just briefly look at the auctions. So this is for the 9th and for the 16th. So a little bit of movement there, But again, the auction momentum is pretty low. And I like the point that you made earlier on. You know, when people start talking about auction clearance rates in some of the minor markets where there is very, very low volumes, you can tell they're pretty desperate.
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, that don't mean anything other than we just bring it up for because people seem to get the thrills out of the auction clearance rates for either to boast about them or to beat the chest over them or to say something about it. Going back to your point, Martin, on your two one-on-ones with those two individuals that. Property investors that bought apartments close to the CBD of Melbourne. Dusty just whispered in my ear that she wants to hold a free seminar and give free advice on how to turn your apartment, your two bedroom apartment, into a four bedroom apartment. Yeah, we'll go back to the show that we did about 6 weeks
Yeah,
ago.
absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, there was an interesting debate with one of them because they had this really tall apartment, right? So it was actually not a standard height, it was actually nearly double. And so they actually thought about maybe I could put a false floor in and double the space. That was a serious thought. To which I replied, well, there are a few issues you need to think about, you know, not least, of course, if you had suddenly put an extra floor in. You've got fire regs and all sorts of things to think about. So that wasn't really a flyer, but it is fascinating.
But maybe there are ways. The WeChat charters have more ways.
Absolutely right. Well, I did re relay the concept of why don't you just strip it all out, right? And then sell it as a sort of, you know, ready for a ripe conversion into something else, you know. It's been done.
Look, if you remember that, if you remember that that WeChat chatter post that we did, was that 8 weeks ago, probably, where you eliminate the kitchen altogether, and there's your that was the fourth bedroom, and you just put a gully style kitchen. I mean, look, this is where you got to give it to the WeChat chatters, right? So that's why Dusty wants to do a free seminars. Free, as long as you send her treats, she likes the bags of treats. She's happy to do run the seminar on. You just send her the floor plan, and she'll work it all out for you. How's that?
Very good. Let's just briefly touch on the rentals in Sydney. So this is the 14th of August, which was what 10,840, and then if we step forward, the 4th of September, 9,931. And if we drop into the 11th of September, 9,872. So there's a bit of a trend, isn't there, Edwin?
Oh, look, there is, and it's getting scary, Martin. It really is getting scary. Only God knows how many people are sleeping in the back seats of the cars. How many young families or families are doing without single parents? Bed hopping, garage hopping. It's a shame. It's shameful. And this is where the state governments really need to step in and look at it. Look, we get to if we get to below 9,000, it game on. It's we're going to see, as I said, we I think it was about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I said we're going to see the demonstrations. We've already started to see that in Queensland, but we're going to see a lot more of that. And look, I'm calling that there's going to be a lot of people are going to be feeling a lot of pressure and a lot of anxiety and a lot of pain, and that's going to be translated, and the result of that is going to be violence against property managers and the like, and real estate agents that are managing properties, especially when they when people are going to be being evicted. That's the nature of this beast, and because there's a lot of emotion there. What do you do, Martin? What do you do? And this is the unfortunate result of decades of bad policy. Again, you and Catherine Cashmore have been very, very vocal about, as well as myself for many years, we've been vocal about the vacant properties that are still out there, that are still out there, and it's like the governments, like the state governments and the federal government, don't really want to do anything. And there's your immediate, 1.2 million, properties that have been vacant for over 6 months, for over 12 months in a lot of the cases. So, I don't know. It's getting scary. It really, really is getting scary. But watch this space. I can see a lot of that imported or that modular home style dwellings popping up in many parts of Sydney too. Because what are people's choices? You can't be we'll end up with tent cities, caravan cities just popping up all over the place. At least we've got to have some sort of control to give the people that are going to be in this nomadic style lifestyle until they find a longevity of tenure or a roof over their heads, and the loved ones, whether it be the young ones or friends. It's scary. It really is scary, Martin.
Now, before we close, Edwin, your tip of the week, all about vendors' bids.
Yeah, we had it. We shared something like this at the beginning of last year, and it's worthwhile sharing again. The vendor's bid does not mean that that the property is on the market. What it actually means is it's just a bid that's meant to encourage an auction that's gone a little bit. It's a bit of a stalemate. It gives the impression, the vendor's bid gives the impression that the property is on the market, but it doesn't mean that the property is on the market unless the agent calls it that the property is on the market with the vendor's bid. It's just that gives you that illusion, as we discussed earlier on in the show. It can only be used if the auctionee discloses that it may be used before the starting of the auction. If the auctionee does not mention anything with respect to the vendor's bid being used or the potential for the vendor's bid to be used at the beginning of the auction when the auction starts, and he wants to bring it in at the end, that's a no-no. You can call it out, but it's but the in the most part, that's all it is. Let's pretend the property's on the market, and people will fall for it, as they did on Saturday, and they'll continue to bid it just to keep things moving along. And a lot of people also believe that the vendor's bid is very much close to the reserve. It may be in some cases, it's a 50-50. It's a 50-50 call. What I recommend that people should be doing constantly and just becoming nuisance at the auctions is keep on asking, regardless of whether or not the auctionee does want to disclose whether or not the property is on the market, or they say that they're not going to tell you when the property is on the market, they're just going to go blah blah blah. Just call them. Just call them. Your one of your primary roles attending the auction is to slow the thing down. In these market conditions, is to really slow it down and do whatever it takes. I've got to be very careful what I say, because holding a license, I'm also accountable for could be reported for all sorts of other things as well. But look, the followers in the general public, just go all out, just go all out. Do whatever it takes to slow the auction down, but don't be fooled by the vendors. But I've got to be careful what I say and what I do, Martin.
Yeah, you do.
But
Absolutely. Be cautious. But look, just let's remind once again, an auction is a pantomime. It's a theatre, right? It's not really a commercial transaction primarily. It is actually a pantomime. And therefore, you need to understand the rules of the game and also what can and often does happen, and what you think is happening and what actually is happening may not be the same. So again, be cautious, but also once you start to understand the rules of the game, then you can influence it. And that includes slowing down the process and you know, asking for clarification, all of those things, that's part of the sport. But it is a sport, and of course, unfortunately, people get caught up in the moment, and particularly if it's moving very quickly, you can get swept off your feet. So slow it down, be cautious, be careful. Edwin, as always, very important advice there. And we'll look forward to doing it again next week, when I'm sure there'll be another whole load of stuff to explore.
Yeah, look, let's hope so. And we'll bring up a segment of shenanigans selling agents play.
Exactly. We should write a book about it. Edwin, thanks very much. See you soon. Take care. Bye-bye. All the best, guys.